With the wake-up bell at dawn on the 1st, we began our May session. This is the mid-session of our retreat period. But there is no difference in our practice during session and outside the session period. You devote yourself to your practice, to the practice that you're supposed to be doing during session and during regular, usual periods. Just this, just continuing your practice. Just doing the practice you're supposed to be doing. What do I follow? Where is the example? What am I supposed to practice? How do I do the practice I've been given? There may be some of you here who really haven't a clue. Or perhaps you will quickly say, I know just exactly what to do. I'm clear on what I'm supposed to practice, and I'm determined to just practice. I won't get off the track. Okay? But are you really practicing obediently, purely? Some of you pass most of your time looking off from your practice. There are many levels of practitioners here now. The founder of Eiheiji, Dogen Zenji, put it most succinctly. Ultimately, essentially, already, together with the great earth, with all being, I attain the Buddha way. Have you seen into this truth yet? Ultimately, together with all being, with the great earth, I attain the Buddha way. Truth is complete. Reality is perfected. This is, from the beginning, the way it is. When you come face to face with your genuine self, this is what you meet. All beings are Buddha, endowed with Buddha virtue, Buddha wisdom. Buddha, one who is thus come, one who has broken through to reality, who has digested this truth, who has polished, perfected the character. When reality is brought to bay, it's not brought to bay out there. Reality is cornered right here, at your heels. That's why we refer to it as awakening to your original self. You have the tendency now to regard practice and awakening as setting out to conquer or to climb that mountain, that ideal, and then finally reaching the peak, I made it. This is, of course, not the reality of the situation, of course. In reality, reality or truth is always, forever, right straight at your heels. Closer than your heels, of course. It is your original self. The person on this earth who most profoundly awakened to truth, who most vividly brought home the truth, and who serves as our closest, most intimate example of the way, is the one we call Shakyamuni, the world-honored one. He was born a baby just like the rest of us. His mother died within 1 week of his birth. His family name was Gautama, and they called him Siddhartha. His mother gave her life, gave her all for Siddhartha. But there is no separation, there is no parting. When the time comes, you can see into this fact. The baby who was to become Shakyamuni looked and was raised like any other baby. But the difference, invisible to the eye, was his mission here on earth, in this lifetime. The season had come for his leaving home and attaining the Buddha way. Awakening to the self is to say, awakening to all being, to each and everything. When Siddhartha awakened, he could understand this for the first time, clearly, at last. Up until then, the world must have appeared to be made up of separate and scattered pieces. He must have been grasping what appeared on the surface, because that's the way it is when we perceive only distance and separation. Perceiving distance, 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 the world must have been painful. Even though you are eating the feast, if the person next to you is starving, you can't help but feel pain. Or if you're starving and the person next to you is eating with great relish, you won't be feeling tranquil yourself. We all go through this season of envy. Reminds me of a family who recently came to the temple. The elder sister had had an easy time from childhood through the university, and she has a strong sense of purpose. She wants to work with troubled children, and she's studying to do that. But the younger sister is having a rough time of it. She's in some way too clever, in some way too sensitive, to be always comparing and contrasting and looking at things too closely and analyzing causes suffering. One comes to believe that this relative comparing state of mind to be all there is. That's miserable. This girl gradually became more and more confused and miserable. And now she's refusing to go to school because things aren't going her way, the way that she would like them. And she's blaming her parents. There's a tremendous amount of disharmony in the family. And her attitude is, why should I have to go through this? It's getting harder and harder for her to pull herself together and get straightened out. So this happens even among brothers and sisters. From the outside, it appears that being too smart for one's own good is like looking through a microscope and seeing too much, analyzing too much. Everything appears dirty or insect-infested. Looking this way, comparing, one sees oneself to be inadequate. Looking at things this way can bring on confusion. And haven't you, yourself, gone through this stage? Shakyamuni was the same, Siddhartha. As a youth, he saw deeply into the human situation. A tiny ant is crawling along. Along comes a little bird and crunch. At last I've got my lunch. And then a bigger bird swoops down to grab it. Survival of the fittest, survival of the strongest. This world is full of suffering. When one is going through a time like this, one tends to see the bleak and painful lining behind what appears joyful, behind what even appears to be happy. As long as you're entrapped in seeing only the surface, you can't graduate from this mind state. Investigate, and it's plain to see that as long as you are seeing this world through the discriminating intellect everything appears separate, disparate. You will not know the utter peace, the true life. You can't have peace of mind, and you can't be satisfied. I know you can understand this because you all are experiencing it for yourself, just as Siddhartha experienced it for himself, piercingly. This world is suffering. So he sought liberation from suffering, freedom from suffering. Is there no freedom? Is there no peace? Siddhartha wanted peace not only for himself, he wanted freedom and peace for all beings who suffer. For him, there was no distinction here between self and others, or rather, the pain of another was his very own pain. This was the foundation of his practice. And in truth, this is just the way it is. The pain of another is my pain. So Siddhartha relinquished all of his riches, his father and the goals that his father and the kingdom had set for him. He let go of his kingdom and of the expectations that others had for him. His dear wife, Yasodhara, his precious son, he let go all attachments. An aside here is that there are many people these days who cast off their families, but for selfish reasons. They abandon their family responsibilities and wander off to do their own thing. I see this a lot because people who have been left in the lurch, abandoned in this way, often find their way to this temple. What can we do now? What should we do now? I get calls in the middle of the night. We have to be one with others in their suffering, shed tears together. Shakyamuni let go of everything. He let go of worldly ways, of worldly views. This is something that we chant every day. I vow to let go of worldly ways, worldly views. But I want to caution you here. You must not make a pretense of following Shakyamuni Buddha's way. Accept and receive the Buddha teaching. If you truly meet with Buddha Dharma, there's no need for trying to work things out your own way. Figure if this is the best way for you. Or maybe that's the better way. That is the worldly ways. There are many different people at the Sesshin. This is your connection, your affinity, to be here practicing the Sesshin. I'm not here talking so as to have you wonder about how to best arrange your life situation, and neither should you do that. This is not the meaning of letting go of worldly ways. There's been some misunderstandings here. One round of Zazen. You sit this one round. You do your kinhin. The bell rings. You may go to the toilet, or you may drink a cup of tea, or return to your room to massage your feet. But what I ask you to do, and this is the only thing I ask you to do, is simply continue your practice. No matter where, no matter what, no matter when, be vigilant. Don't think that your practice is just for the time that you're on your cushion. Just, no matter where, what, when, no matter what comes up, please do your practice without analyzing, without complaint, without evaluation, without judgment. Just accept the practice that you're given and do it. Receive and embrace Buddha Dharma. You can, without fail, receive and accept openly, sincerely, embrace Buddha Dharma. Please don't be put off or led astray by the words "let go of worldly ways" or "let go of worldly perceptions." Because hearing these words, you're most tempted to imitate its meaning. And that is looking off. Do not get caught up in it. Already, you are here now, able to accept and receive the Dharma teaching. You can practice the genuine Chitante. You can continue this one single doing. Hearing the word Tante, a foreigner is surely going to come and ask me what it means. I will show you, don't worry. This one doing. This one doing. I tell you to do it 100 times, and 100 times it passes you by. I show you 1,000 times, and 1,000 times you fail to hear it. 10,000 times I show you, and 10,000 times it falls upon deaf ears. You remain a hard mass of self-centered preoccupation. But when the time comes for you to be one with your true character, you will see that self-centered preoccupation, you will see that preoccupation for what it was. And at that time, I will say, good. I've been waiting for you to come around. You have to be a bit hard with your own self-centeredness. You have to come to terms, you have to see for yourself just how arrogant you are. But if you really have Buddha affinity, affinity with Buddha teaching, the time will certainly come when you will nobly let go of self-cherishing. So no matter what comes up, no matter how hard it may seem to be, no matter how tempted you are to look up, look off, you must not give up. You must not believe that there is no hope for you. I might as well give up. All is well. This point is settled, decided. Let go of worldly ways and receive and accept Buddha Dharma. Your time will come, definitely. Ultimately, together with all beings, with the great earth, I attain the way. Just this. Just this. Let it shine. Let there be clouds. The true form of Mount Fuji never changes. Yes. Buddha Dharma speaks of the origin of the origin of the origin, the source of the source, the truth of truth. The problem is that when we say origin, you tend to think there is something outside origin, something besides origin. The truth is, there is nothing outside the source. No thing. All being is Buddha. Buddha virtue, Buddha wisdom. Original truth, the source of the source. The reality of all things. Complete virtue, perfect merit. This is what you will discover for yourself. I will accept and embrace Buddha Dharma. Where is it? What am I to do? Show me an example. The example is everywhere to be seen, everywhere to be found. There is no thing which is not Buddha Dharma. Everything is the perfect revelation of truth. But here's the catch. Our customary tendency to grasp, to latch on to something, to hold on, to cruise. We've cultivated this habit, this view, lifetime after lifetime. If I'm not grasping, it's not mine. If I'm not holding on, it's not mine. We go around with this unspoken, unrecognized notion. But the truth is that anything grasped is not true, not truth. Anything grasped is hollow, hollow. Truth cannot be grasped. So we try to grasp what cannot be grasped, and we imagine this phantom to be truth, to be reality, to be genuine. This is the seed for all suffering. So, die while alive and know true calm, ease. Without death, you cannot even begin to imagine ease. Death, this is not the death of the physical body. Our clever consciousness is at work, busily dividing and calculating, picking and choosing. And this we take to be the hero, the master. We thus imagine ourselves to be alive. Die while alive and know true ease, true comfort. This death is the release of one's own personal judging and calculating. It's breaking through discrimination. I refuse to entertain my own judgments. Die the great death and be alive. These are the truthful words of one who has let go of discriminating, let go of judging. And how to do this? Each one of you has been given a practice. Walk this step, this practice step. Treat as precious this connection, this intimate bond. Stick with your practice without becoming entangled, without becoming confused. I show you how to practice very clearly and definitely. I pray that you can practice just as you were shown, without adding your own evaluations, without getting caught up in your own ideas. Just this practice, just as you have been shown. It's the reality of the bond between teacher and student. Please do not be faithless. Do not receive your practice or treat this bond as mere reference material. If you're holding on to your own opinions and notions regarding practice, of course you will fail. Of course you will not be practicing. Let go of worldly views and receive and accept Buddha Dharma. Worldly views, worldly ways, your own judgments based upon I, me, mine. Self-cherishing, worldly ways. With courage, let go of body and mind, forget about them. The season of your liberation will certainly, without fail, come for you. The groundwork, the ground, is your sincere obedience to this one doing. Make up your mind to do it. Do it. Be decided. be firm. Do not waver. If your practice is not clear, you must come to Doksan. Openly receive Doksan. Sunny skies, good. Cloudy skies, fine. The original form of Mount Fuji never changes. Original form never changes. So, practice it. Together with all beings, we attain the Buddha way. It's neither too hot